This week on Vaticano, on the 11th anniversary of Pope Francis's apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel, we revisit this landmark document on proclaiming the gospel in today's world. Join us at the Pontifical Lateran University in Rome, where the rector shares the unique role this institution plays in the church. And on the Feast of Saint Cecilia, patron saint of music, we present a special feature on sacred music. Vaticano starts now. The Vatican Library reached an agreement with the Kingdom of Bahrain. The document will focus on supporting the design and implementation of an innovative module to be used during conservation work, the cataloging and preservation of Arabic cultural heritage held at the Vatican Apostolic Library, and the organization of joint projects aimed at promoting and disseminating this precious cultural heritage that the Vatican Library preserves.
La firma di questo documento è il punto di arrivo.
The signing of this document is the culmination of a dialogue that was opened a year and a half ago. It finds its roots in the trip that the Holy Father made to Bahrain, of which opened a great sensitivity on the part of the king, and also therefore on the part of the people of Bahrain, to dialogue with the Catholic Church. The consequence of this visit is that we had the idea of building a multi-year agreement that will be developed in the coming years. That concerns both the contributions that they will be able to make for the restoration of our work that we have here, starting with those of common interest, but also on the construction of a more advanced computer system than what is used in libraries today.
The memorandum with Bahrain not only reflects the close collaboration between two libraries, but also demonstrates concretely that two institutions with different cultural and religious backgrounds can work together to enhance the treasures and the heritage of humanity that each one preserves. This collaboration between the Vatican and Bahrain shows how relations were reinforced after Pope Francis's historic apostolic visit in November of 2022, becoming the first pontiff to visit the Muslim island nation located in the Persian Gulf on the occasion of the Bahrain Forum for Dialogue, East and West for Human Coexistence. She was a woman who defied the odds, broke barriers, and dedicated her life to serving those most in need. Now her legacy shines brighter than ever. St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, also known as Mother Cabrini, returns to her homeland of Italy as a pilgrim of hope ahead of the 2025 Jubilee. On the anniversary of her beatification, a statue was unveiled in Rome in the garden of the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls. The work recognizes her Italian roots and lifelong service for immigrants worldwide. The sculpture was designed and created in Chicago, where Mother Cabrini lived, served, and died.
The actual sculpting began with a design that our client, Holy Name Cathedral, chose. And then the Cabrini sisters let us borrow a habit, the outfit that they wear. And we used a model. The other artist on this project, Jessica, modeled.
So that's very helpful to have 360 degrees, you know, reference photos in different positions, and then the one that you see in the statue is the one that was selected.
And then once we are comfortable that we have the right position, we make an armature out of metal, a skeleton. The skeleton is then built up with wood, bigger, and then clay on top of that. And then we sculpt all of the detail until it is perfect. Once the sculpting is complete, a rubber mold is applied to the sculpture, and then a plaster mother mold is on top of the rubber. The plaster dries, we take it off. We peel the rubber off. Lay the plaster back, the rubber back in the plaster. It goes to a bronze foundry. And there they use the ancient lost wax process to create the bronze you see here.
her message and her dedication to the immigrants and to the poor, I think, is very timely now. And I wish a lot more Christians today would hear her message and apply it to those around them.
The unveiling event was attended by 80 pilgrims from Chicago who journeyed across the Atlantic with the statue, emphasizing Mother Cabrini's role in connecting people across continents. Remarkably, once her own journey across the Atlantic was marked by more than just physical travel. In 1912, she was preparing to return to the U.S. aboard the RMS Titanic, but a last-minute crisis at one of her hospitals forced her to change her plans. She left earlier than expected, and when the Titanic tragically sank, she wrote to her sisters saying, "I might have left with it, but divine providence, which is constantly watching, did not allow it."
Madre Cabrini often said, "I can do all things through him who gives me strength." For us, in this century marked by so much dehumanization, this image in this basilica reassures us that we can move forward with courage and hope.
The mission of Saint Cabrini lives on through the lives she touched and the hospitals, orphanages, and schools she founded.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. A special Mass for Peace was celebrated to mark 1,000 days of war in Ukraine. His Eminence Cardinal Matteo Zuppi, the Vatican's special envoy for peace in Ukraine, presided over the liturgy at the Church of Santa Maria in Trastevere on Wednesday, November 20th. The solemn occasion highlighted the Vatican's enduring commitment to peace and its solidarity with all those affected by the conflict. The Vatican has approved liturgical adaptations for indigenous communities in Chiapas, Mexico, allowing ritual dances during the offertory, prayer of the faithful, and post-communion thanksgiving. The Dicastery for Divine Worship clarified that these are not folklore, but meaningful movements involving the entire assembly. Pope Francis has ordered the expansion of the Vatican Library and Archives to a new location outside the Vatican City, making its treasures more accessible. The new facility, shared with Rome's major seminary, will house selected materials under the supervision of a commission representing the Secretariat of State, the Vatican Apostolic Archives, and the Vatican Library. Catholic leaders from 25 European countries gathered in Rome to address child protection and support for abuse survivors. The conference, hosted by the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, highlighted the Church's commitment to safeguarding the vulnerable. In a message, Pope Francis described these efforts as a sign of the Church's ongoing dedication to protecting the most vulnerable in our midst. Pope Francis has established an annual commemoration of local saints, blesseds, venerables, and servants of God to be observed every year on November 9, starting with the upcoming Jubilee. While not a new liturgical feast, the Pope urged dioceses to honor these figures through homilies or other initiatives outside the liturgy. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Benedictia de Grian for EWTN Vaticano.
We'll be back shortly with more on the anniversary of Pope Francis's first apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium. Evangelii Gaudium is Pope Francis's first apostolic exhortation. The letter, addressed to the people of God, was published on November the 24th, 2013, just 6 months after his election as Pope. This document is key to understanding his pontificate.
In this apostolic exhortation, Pope Francis sets a very clear direction for the Church, a direction that must be paramount and shape the entire Church, and that direction is evangelization, the mission.
Gonzalo de la Morena, a theologian at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross, noted that the exhortation responded to the historical context of the Church at the time it was published and gave a renewed impetus to the faithful.
Estamos hablando del año 2013.
We are talking about the year 2013, when a month earlier, for the first time in nearly 1,000 years, a pope had resigned under circumstances perceived as a major crisis for the Universal Church, particularly the Roman Curia. There may have been a sense of discouragement within the church at all levels. Then Pope Francis arrives and, with this encyclical, issues a powerful call to reignite the enthusiasm for the church's mission. The mission Christ entrusted to it, to evangelize, to proclaim, with all the joy that Christ has risen and that Christ is the Savior.
Que Cristo ha resucitado y que Cristo es el Salvador.
The message of Evangelii Gaudium ranges from a call to transform the church into one that goes forth to meet those in need of the gospel, to an analysis of the social dimension of evangelization, and concludes with a reminder that the strength of the missionary endeavor must come from a personal encounter with Christ, a true and intimate conversion. As the Pope states in the first point of the encyclical, "In this exhortation, I wish to address the Christian faithful and invite them to a new evangelizing phase, marked by joy, and to outline paths for the Church's journey in the years to come." With these words, the newly elected pontiff sets the map for his pontificate. In the text, he expresses his desire for lay people to be active agents of evangelization. His aim to integrate the entire people of God aligns with the Constitution Lumen Gentium, which emphasizes that the role of lay people in the church is not secondary, but that each one is part of the evangelizing mission.
Evangelii Gaudium draws heavily from Lumen Gentium. Essentially, it activates principle that were declared in Lumen Gentium but need to be translated into the life of the church.
De la Iglesia.
In the apostolic exhortation, Pope Francis also lists ecclesial challenges that hinder the church from carrying out its mission in the world.
La passione di evangelizzare.
The Pope explains that the church acknowledges the indispensable contribution of women in society, but that there is still a need to broaden the space for a more incisive female presence in the church.
El Papa quiere que...
The Pope wants lay people, both men and women, to be visibly active agents. This is clearly seen in his pontificate and especially in the matter of synodality. This is also where the possibility of exploring the role of women in the church comes in. Because Pope Francis has often stated, and it is clear in Evangelii Gaudium, that he neither wants nor can allow women to be ordained as priests, because the Pope is not the owner or master of the church.
Porque el Papa no es dueño y señor de la Iglesia.
Cari fratelli e sorelle.
In point 103, the Pope acknowledges that women share pastoral responsibilities with priests, contribute to accompanying individuals, families, or groups, and bring new contributions to theological reflection. In the text, the Pope issues a call for unity, no war among ourselves. With this, he invites everyone to focus on the mission of evangelization rather than on polarization within the church. The Holy Father emphasizes that the renewed missionary drive comes from evangelizers who pray and work. Point 262. Neither mystical proposals without strong social and missionary commitment, nor social or pastoral discourses and practices without a spirituality that transforms the heart are useful.
In missionary spirituality, there must be a personal encounter with Jesus Christ, and these translate into a life of prayer and a life centered on the Eucharist. It cannot remain merely an intimate matter. That encounter must also have a communal dimension.
También su dimensión comunitaria.
Pope Francis concludes the apostolic exhortation by reminding us that the church urgently needs the breath of prayer, and invites the faithful to avoid a false spirituality. Pontifical Lateran University, known as the University of the Pope, recently celebrated its Dies Academicus, the academic school year.
Allora ci sono 60.
Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief, interviewed Archbishop Alfonso Amarante, rector of the university. Archbishop Amarante highlighted the university's unique blend of philosophical, theological, and canon law studies, alongside secular legal disciplines, attracting a diverse international student body from five continents. The Pontifical Lateran University holds a special role with the Holy See and is crucial in training future church leaders.
And this is really the university of the Pope. Can you tell us a little bit more what the students here actually learn?
Questa è una pontificia università.
This is a pontifical university. Pontifical means that it has a special status linked to the Holy See. And here there are two branches of this university. Philosophical, theological, canon law studies, and legal studies, which we could say are more secular for worldly sciences.
Per le scienze del mondo.
How many students are here?
In questo momento ci sono circa.
At this moment, there are about 1,200 students, where 60% belong to religious orders, seminarians, nuns, and then there's 40% composed of lay people. Precisely because of the dual nature of the university with these two paths, one philosophical and theological studies and one legal studies.
Why do students come here? Why should they study here at the Pontifical University of the Lateran?
Ma I motivi sono davvero tantissimi.
The reasons are really many. The first reason I can say is that the university has a special connection with the Holy See, and therefore with all the popes. Today with Francis, yesterday with Benedict, the other day with John Paul II, and tomorrow, as God wills. Second reason, because truly studying in Rome means studying at the center of Christianity, at the center of the world. Coming to Rome means experiencing the church. In fact, our students, the percentage of Italians are very small, they come from all five continents.
You said here it's not only about studying theology, but really also developing and growing deeper and deepening the idea of theology.
La ringrazio per questa domanda perché mi dà l'opportunità.
Thank you for this question, because it gives me the opportunity to respond and clarify even better. There are multiple levels of study. This is the first level, the one to obtain a degree. At this level, what is provided? The foundations of philosophy, theology, canon law, pastoral studies, and jurisprudence. But after the first level, there is a second level, which is that of a specialist degree. At this level, what happens? If in the first level the student is called more to receive the content, here in the second level, they are called to engage with the sources. So, to confront, to really understand, to then reach a third level which corresponds to a doctoral degree, where, starting from the sources, they develop an autonomous thought, but with faithfulness to the magisterium.
We'll be back after a short break with a special feature on the revival of sacred music.
Sang for the Thursday night adoration, and I don't think we understood the gravity of that prior to coming to the Eucharistic Congress. The response we got was tremendous. We were told that this was the highlight of the entire Congress, and I think a lot of people said that because they'd never heard the beauty of sacred music before.
Dedicated to preserving the Church's heritage of sacred music, the men's choral vocal ensemble, Floriani, has sung at masses and concerts in shrines, basilicas, and cathedrals across the U.S.
We started practicing Gregorian music, and we started practicing different polyphonic works. And eventually we started singing for different parishes throughout the L.A. Archdiocese. And pretty soon I realized this could be a mission.
The church has often highlighted that its musical tradition is a treasure of inestimable value, greater even than that of any other art. Its purpose being the glory of God and the sanctification of the faithful, sacred music is and always has been an essential part of the liturgy.
Music is not just like something you can slap onto the liturgy. It's really something integral to the liturgy itself. So in the early church, you actually see more of that because everything in the liturgy had to be sung. Music is an essential part of the worship of God.
Across the world, efforts to share and revive the church's musical treasures can be observed. In Rome, the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music, which serves as the Vatican State's University for Church Music, is leading in this endeavor. Directed by Father Robert Melhart, a Dominican priest from Germany with a prominent career in conducting choirs and orchestras across Oxford, Vienna, and Munich, the International Institute offers 21 degrees across 7 disciplines, such as composition, choir conducting, organ, and chant.
They just have to have an experience with the great works of our tradition. So if you're an organist, doesn't matter, you have to have sung Ave Verum by Mozart and Locus Iste by Bruckner and Sicut Servus by Palestrina. You can't be a church musician or you can't have a degree of this institution without the knowledge of these pieces.
Many students take their training into the world, establishing choirs, conservatories, and music institutions in their home countries, all for the greater glory of God. Father Robert emphasizes the power of music as a tool for evangelization, noting that its beauty can draw even those far from the church closer to the faith and God.
When it comes to apologetics, what have we in store for our mission? So it's the saints, it's the holiness, and it's the beauty, it's the arts. So, What is the role of music in the life of the church? It is a very important part of what the church does good for humanity and for us, and which testifies her beauty and her truthfulness in this world, because it is a gesture of glorifying our Creator and Savior.
Not only does sacred music attract people to the church and liturgies through its beauty, but it also helps those who sing and those who listen to the music to pray better.
You sing the sacred texts of the Bible, of the church, in the liturgy, in community. And so you penetrate intellectually the texts as expressed by the great composers of our church and of humanity, but you live that content at the same time emotionally by expressing it and by singing it. It elevates you and it brings you into that embrace of glory that you are immersed in at the end.
In today's world, where Gregorian chant and the organ have often been set aside for more contemporary sounds, initiatives like Floriani emerge as vital beacons. By bringing Gregorian chant and ancient melodies, safeguarded by the church for centuries, to the global stage, they not only celebrate timeless traditions, but also inspire a deeper connection to the transcendent beauty of faith.
The culture it's so much in flux. Everything's always changing. There's always a new trend that's coming about. And I think young people want something to hold on to. They want something stable, something firm, something that doesn't just shift with the trends of the world. Sacred music and liturgy really go hand in hand in delivering that. Like this is an unchanging thing, and it's an unchanging, beautiful thing that roots us in our identity as Catholics.